Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, welcome to my Dog Psychology Radio Show. My name is Dale McCluskey, and I'd like to welcome you. On today's show, I'm going to be talking about the difference between appearances and meaningful change, and how it is that dog training can be very, very deceiving when it comes to making certain assumptions based on how dogs respond to certain, within the framework of certain scripts. So, again, I'm going to be talking a little bit about this. Just provide some updates. It's been a little while since I've done a show. Plan on trying to get some more shows completed in a fairly routine type of way. Just time management. I guess that's an issue that we all struggle with. But again, I want to try to put out as much information, free information, as possible on my site. I've made all my YouTube videos available for free, so I would really encourage you to check them out. You can get to them by either just going into YouTube and typing my name in, Dale McCluskey, type my name into the YouTube search box, and my channel will all come up. And I encourage you to subscribe to my channel. That way, any new videos that come out, you'll immediately get them. And you're going to see a lot of new videos coming up this month, the month of August. I'm having some board and trains onboarding very shortly this week, and so therefore you'll be able to see me working some dogs, and I'll be able to provide some really good pointers for people. So again, just encourage you to check out my YouTube channel. I'll be posting these videos as well on my site, so either way, through Facebook or through YouTube or through my blog part of my site, you'll have access to these. But again, encourage you to check these out. But also all my prior videos on YouTube. I have right now, I believe it's over 400 videos that are available for free. If you go through those and just start watching them when you have time, you're going to get some really great information. There's stuff in there that you're not going to see anywhere else, because it's based on approaching training for what it is at the intervention level. And again, I'll talk a little bit about this intervention part of this, because really what it does is it puts me in a very challenging situation for people, and even for myself at this level, because what it does is it really can rub a lot of people the wrong way, including trainers. And although that's not always my intention, because again, it's really the focus needs to be on helping people. But at the same time, it really challenges how people think based on how a lot of people are thinking right now. What it does is it really offers the greatest amount of hope for very difficult situations, especially when you get into situations involving aggression, what's defined as fear aggression, stress on dogs. When you approach training at the level that I show what it is, it really can be very helpful. It really can bring a lot of hopeless, seemingly hopeless situations back from the edge. And I'll talk on this show too a little bit about why I don't, incorporate certain ideologies, certain tenets such as counter-conditioning, conditioning. I don't follow the kind of mainstream way of approaching dog behavior through quadrants. And again, I'll talk about why I don't do that, and this whole when you look at the relational scripting process, why it can be very problematic, especially this overreaching issue of devaluation, which, and again, I'll talk about this on this show and shows that I'm going to be putting out here shortly. That's really the biggest issue that really impacts the most people, is the issue of devaluation, and it goes into this issue of appearances and meaningful change, and it's very, very problematic based on using certain motivating agents such as treats in the scripting process. Why that's very much so a very big problem for people, and when it comes to influencing the dog's decision-making process. So again, it's something to be very aware of, because again, what I show is, you know, things can be very deceiving, but you have to be able to step back from it to kind of let go of certain ways of thinking to see what I'm talking about. It takes, really kind of intentional, thought process. It really requires you to apply critical thinking to really be able to sort through this issue of appearances. It can be very difficult. And even more so, what I find for people, for trainers or behaviorists, or people who have really invested into that way of thinking, into that scripting process, it really puts people at a real big disadvantage, because you get comfortable. You tend to, what tends to happen is the focus gets shifted onto the dog as somehow a problem with, genetics or whatever. The focus gets shifted, and so the real issue never gets fixed. And so what happens is the hope of, fixing situations gets taken away. You're actually removing hope from situations instead of, introducing hope. You're removing that, and whether you realize it or not. And so that's why I say, if you're wanting to be a trainer, wanting to get to this level of seeing training at this level, granted, it will put you in a really challenging situation based on even at a business model level, because you're not going to be probably as busy as you want to be, because you're not promoting the mainstream thinking. You're not fueling people's emotions that way. You're getting them to reconcile their emotions. So, it really is an intervention, because you're bringing people in the right relationship. So ultimately, you're bringing the focus on to them, away from the dog that way. So, people really tend to not want to hear that. I mean, that's why what's popular right now is really a big issue, because of people's feelings and their emotions, and people want what they want. And, it's being promoted. So if you really look at the dynamics in play, what you'll find is it really elevates the level of how challenging this can be to get people to really see what I'm showing. I mean, I understand, and I certainly understand that. But again, step by step, if you just start to approach it from the point of, of this devaluation issue, and start to kind of step back a little bit, you'll perhaps start to see what I'm showing. You'll start to make more sense to you, and you'll be able to really work on some very challenging situations. You aren't going to be stopped, so to speak. You're going to be able to really help a lot more people, a lot more dogs. And even when you get into the animal rescue part of this, people who want to rescue dogs, would really encourage people who are into dog rescue to really consider what I'm saying. It can be a big problem in the dog rescue part of it, because of playing off people's emotions, and but at the physical level with, dogs are abused, again, this can be a nightmare scenario for people, because people hold on to that emotional baggage, and it really gets in the way of creating meaningful change, because it introduces this devaluation issue. It really will bring this into play between dogs and their owners, because, when you feel bad for dogs that way, and you don't reconcile your emotions, it's weakness to the dog. It starts to have that impact relationally. And so even though the dog has moved forward, from that point of that incident or injury or whatever, the abuse, the person holds on to that, and it starts to impact the relationship, because the dog will start to devalue the person. And then we think that the dog is still recovering from the injury or the abuse. And really, we're the ones that have created that snowball effect. We've kind of pushed that snowball down the hill, and it's gathered steam, and it's created that scenario. So it's very, very difficult for people to overcome that. So again, just encourage people, again, check out my YouTube channel. I've got lots of videos there. if you're looking for, you know, a way to kind of get going, again, and I'll talk about these on my shows, you know, just think of it more as a journey. You have to look at it as a, you know, kind of a step-by-step process, kind of taking baby steps. And even if you're dealing with a very aggressive, you know, problematic situation, by using structure, you know, by incorporating structure properly, using the crate and just advocating, you know, leash and muzzles and control, it allows you to be able to build that bridge. It allows you to take the pressure off you, and you'll be able to incorporate all these, all the methods and techniques I show people, and do it in a smart way, so no one's getting bitten. You know, there's no bad outcomes, and you can get to where you need to go without causing undue stress on the dog, undue stress on yourself, and putting yourself in a position where it's out of your control. Because again, once you deal with a dog in an aggressive situation, the dog has hit that level of biting somebody, you know, and the dog does bite somebody, and you know, that's something that can be controlled once you understand, have the right information, then it eliminates your choice, your ability to do anything, because it, you know, someone may take legal action or call the police or whatever, and then you lose that ability to save that dog, perhaps, you know, takes out of your hand. So I encourage people to think about that, you know, why it's so important that once you're dealing with an aggressive situation, you really want to make sure that you bring the proper protocols online, so you're able to, you know, to rehab the situation and bring the dog back from the edge. And speaking of back from the edge, again, I use this episode a little bit updating what's going on. I am working on currently writing a new book. It's called Back from the Edge, which it focuses on rehabbing very serious dog aggression issues, how to go about doing that. So, you know, it's going deeper. My other books, you know, you'll find the basic method in there. I do talk a little bit about aggression. All the techniques are in there. However, in this book, I believe this is my seventh book that I'm putting out. This one goes a little deeper, gets into the actual specifics of dealing with aggressive cases and how to, you know, how to bring the right scripting online so that you can very intentionally bring any dog back from the edge. But again, approaching it at the intervention level. And I do get into some of this devaluation issue, because it's very important to people to understand that, you know, you have to be able to get beyond appearances. You can't be deceived. I mean, that's, you know, so if you're, again, and Michelle, I'll talk a little bit about this, but if you're introducing, incorporating certain methods and ideologies, you're introducing this devaluation issue. You're putting people at risk. And the real problem to understand with this is if you're messing around, you're playing around with, say, using treats when you don't have to use treats, but you're doing it through, say, counter conditioning, which, again, sounds great. You know, a lot of people, when they get involved in dog training, you know, they're looking for, it's kind of like a roadmap. I mean, you're looking for a roadmap you can follow, something that you can start to get your head around. It makes sense, and I understand that. I really do. I mean, you know, when I first started doing training back in 1992, when I was training my first police dog, I started off with the kind of yank and crank method, you know, and, you know, but still using treats at times, looking at that scripting with, you know, learning theory, how, you know, incorporating all that. But again, when I came into, out of the police side of things, when I started getting into the public domain with helping people, what really got my attention was that the amount of dog owners struggling, the amount of people that were coming to me who were coming from these systems which promoted, you know, the so-called science of dog training, which promoted learning theory this way, which used treats and this type of scripts, which really promoted this idea that, you know, you could, dogs can learn. I mean, it's, you know, and again, it does sound great, but I think people have to understand, and this is the important, you know, point here, you know, which caused me to really step back, was, you know, looking at this, you know, answering this question, you know, why is it that people were failing, or some people were succeeding, others were failing, you know, within the exact same systems of training? And I asked that question in one of my videos. If you go watch my videos, you know, I put one of those questions out there just for people to ponder that. I mean, if you're open-minded and you're, you know, the least bit, you know, objective, you know, you consider what that question. And that's a question that I asked, you know, a long time ago. It's one of those contradictions in training that you're asked, you know, look at that and say, well, what is going on? You know, why is it that some people are failing, some are succeeding? Is it the dog's fault? You know, clearly, if you're looking for fault, you know, immediately people look at the dog as somehow the problem, and that's generally where the focus will shift, you know, onto the dog instead of onto the, you know, method or ideology at the relational level. Say, well, you know, are we missing something here? Is it truly a dog's truly, you know, governed by, you know, by, you know, at the response level? Does this line up? You know, when a dog is going through that script, when a dog's doing the sit down, come and stay, you know, within that script for the treats, even when the treats go away, you know, is that does that represent what it is at the appearance level? You know, does that represent that change really is happening? You know, yes or no? And, you know, that's a tough question for people to ask, especially if you're, you know, say a trainer who's done it that way for many years. You know, but the problem here is a lot of people either aren't auditing, you know, their method, or the dog owners a lot of times aren't calling the trainer, aren't giving the trainer the information. And even if they did give the trainer the information, you know, question asked is what does that trainer do with that information? Especially if they've been following this script for, say, 20 years. What does that mean? Well, that's a problem. I mean, it means generally that, you know, they're not going to step back. I mean, that's generally how this goes down. And really consider the fact of what I'm saying, what I'm showing. Because, again, this issue of appearances, and this is the problem when you get into this issue of devaluation, where dogs are basically fading out the dog owner, objectifying and fading out the dog owner, and the owner has, you know, they have their emotions invested into the relationship that way, it's a major problem. Because, again, the dynamics in play don't really encourage, including the trainer, with what they've invested into this scripting. It doesn't really encourage people to self-audit. I mean, that's one big problem that people have to understand when I'm talking about, you know, the problem with this issue with devaluation and dogs as relational beings, and what where society is at right now when it comes to this relationship. It's not exactly helpful to when it comes to bringing people into seeing what I'm showing. It really doesn't. In fact, it really is going to end up, this devaluation issue really spills over into me. I mean, people want to devalue what I'm saying because it forces the focus to come on to the people, okay, and as the agent of change, rather than, because if you think about this whole issue of dogs learning, ask yourself the question, where's the focus go shift? If you're promoting learning theory this way, well, the focus shifts onto the dog as the problem. Okay, as needing to learn. Okay, and that shifts the focus away from the owner needing to change how they think. Right? It's about changing how the dog thinks, but in a non-relational way. Okay, this is why there's a lot of trainers out there, a lot of behavioralists right now who try to discredit the whole pack issue. Dogs as social relational beings that way because it's about their script. It's about their ideology. Because they know what that ultimately means to them if, you know, it was concluded that dogs are pack animals. But the problem really is, I mean, it's kind of a silly notion, but anyone who has any common sense can look at dogs and say, well, they're clearly pack animals because of the fact they associate in groups and packs. But then behaviorists will say, well, they're loosely formed associations and go on. But again, what you have to really look at is what motivates people to say the things they say. And ultimately, you have to take it back to what they're promoting and then go back even, kind of focus in even tighter onto the scripting and then ask yourself the question, where's the focus shifting when, when using treats and this ideology doesn't work in their kind of own little, tightly controlled world, which they control, where's the focus shift? Well, under the dog is the problem. And so that's why dogs will be left kind of holding the bag of these relationally with the role, holding on to the stress and anxiety, and nothing's really changed at all. But, what happens is kind of good enough for them, because at times it appears the dog is it's all holding together, and then other times it's all falling apart. Generally, it's falling apart in the real-world settings, and then people are trying to find excuses for that. Well, the real truth of it is that role change hasn't really happened. I mean, and if you really are able to step back and see what I show, what you see, you find is that meaningful change hasn't taken hold at all, that there's a devaluation issue happening. The dog is seeing the person as basically a property, so to speak, and the type of connection that's established is not one that represents meaningful influence. Trainers who are using this learning theory this way, what's happening is they're making certain assumptions. And this is a big point here. I mean, this is really blows things out of the water. And this is why I'm at the point I'm at with it comes to training being an intervention is, is looking at the scripting of learning-based theory and the assumptions that people who are promoting learning this way are making that response represents a like-minded state. And when I say like-minded state, I'm talking about meaningful change happening, that the dog is learning its way into being a better dog, and that generally just isn't true. I mean, that premise, that tenet, which is a core tenet of this, of how the script is promoted, is generally completely upside down. But the ability to test it or discern, the context of that script. It's impossible to gain clarity and context if you don't step back and recognize how a dog's decision-making process is governed at the social relational level, at the level that I show. You can't discern that. You can't, you can't qualify it. So this is really what the dog training world is at right now. It's the show is about appearances, and it's exactly what I'm talking about, the issue of appearances within the framework of dogs as relational beings. And so the problem is when you take this roadmap of working off quadrants and with, learning that way with, negative and positive, you're taking that script again outside the parameters of dogs as relational beings. You're not truly looking at the scripting the way that I show at the intervention level at all. You're following along, using this framework, which is generally it puts people into a very problematic position because the scripting doesn't line up, okay, which means that it's about the packaging. So, for example, a dog owner who needs to come into the right relationship, who the dog perceives as very, very weak and very emotional with the dog, if you start, incorporating, say, using treats or counter conditioning, because of this issue of devaluation, because it truly is about, bringing influence online at the intervention level, you're not doing that. You're influencing, you're not truly changing how the person thinks because you're actually incorporating the script into a certain level, and what it can do is it can perhaps not get you to where you need to go. It can stall you out, okay? It can actually, because the person isn't truly, it's like a tachometer moving over fully to the place where it's going to be meaningful enough to the dog to bring them back from the edge. And this is where, you know, I see trainers using certain tenets. You know, I ask the question, why are they doing that? I mean, in general, I think a lot of times because that roadmap is so entrenched in the dog training world that it's difficult for many to get away from it. And don't get me wrong, you know, this is the problem, and this is the problem with evaluation. And this isn't even a problem going into personality types, is that, again, I could get away with it. I mean, I can use certain tenets, but again, it's about how I think, right? So it's a total different context. I can use certain tenets, and all the dogs that are directly under me are going to roll change just fine. I'm not going to have a single problem. But this is going into a higher level of understanding this issue. When I talk about the people coming through me or to me and for help, they're not going to be so fortunate. And I'm not going to see it, okay, that they're not going to be, I'm not going to even see the fact they're failing because of this devaluation issue, the dynamics that in play. The script is going to look exactly the same. But one's going to be counterfeit, one's not. Okay, that's the problem here. So anyway, just something to really think about. I know this is really, you know, can be very difficult for people to comprehend depending on what they've invested in. But I would really, really encourage you to think about what I'm saying. There definitely is some similarities. If you go into my videos, you know, they'll look, you know, promotes the idea of leadership. I'm working off a relational model. So even the type of influence, you know, I even make the distinction between corrective and relational influence. I'd encourage you to think about that as well, because it's not the same. It looks the same at a certain level, but it's not the same. The timing of it is different. So just really encourage you to check out, you know, my website, check out my videos, think about this issue of appearances, the issue of devaluation. Those are really big points to really keep in mind. And you know, I guess the question becomes, you know, Dale, how do I get to that point? I mean, how do I get to a point of seeing training as an intervention? Well, I would encourage you, you take on the really difficult cases. You take on the cases that other people want to throw to the side, and you take my model and you apply it. And that's what you do, and you'll start to see what I'm showing. You know, start making sense to you. It may take some time, but it'll make some sense. So again, coming to the end here of this show, but again, encourage you to check out my website, www.caninepack.com. Lots of great information. If you want help with your dog, I'd be more than happy to help you, regardless of where you live. If you're in the Florida area, I'm out of St. Cloud, Florida. I'm near Kissimmee in Orlando, Melbourne, Palm Bay, Claremont, all those areas, Central Florida. I can go into people's homes, email me, and set up a home visit. Be more than happy to help you out. People can come here to me. Or if you live beyond Florida, I can still come to you. I mean, just a matter of emailing me and look for a costing. Or there's distance help available too on my site. And that involves, you know, being able to talk to you through Skype, being able for you to send me some video clips, private video clips of, you know, what you're doing with your dog, and I'd be able to get you on the right path. So you can check that out as well. But also I got lots of great information, including books on my site as well. You can check out, you know, quite a few training guides available too. So anyway, thanks for listening today. I hope you have a wonderful day.